Can we talk a little bit about how you got into all of this, when you started playing?
I started, as many violinists do, when I was very little. I was 4 years old, and my mother signed me up for Suzuki lessons, and I never looked back.
You went to school, you studied Suzuki method, then you ended up going to Curtis. How old were you when you went to Curtis?
I was 10 years old when I enrolled at Curtis, and my teacher in Edmonton, Canada, where I'm from, had been himself a student at Curtis when he was 12, I think. So he had this history with Curtis as one of the youngsters there, and he sent me off to audition, and we were all surprised, but I got in. So.
And you've studied with some amazing teachers.
I have. I've had the best luck with amazing teachers. I've had Yasha Brodsky, who is just the most wonderful foundation in every sense, musical and technical, and just a very classical training in violin playing while I was at Curtis for 6 years. Then I went to the Juilliard School. I studied with Dorothy DeLay, and I learned a lot from her about presentation and about the world of music out there. And I studied for 2 years with Robert Mann, the founding first violinist of the Juilliard Quartet. Again, a very, very deep musician, full of questions and exciting and interesting answers. So I really had the best training one could ask for.
And when you study with these legendary teachers, teachers who have become legendary almost, are they giving you tools to develop your own style, or are they teaching you a particular style of playing?
Well, I think that part of the way I was taught was to learn by example. So, for example, Mr. Brodsky would sing or demonstrate a phrase on the violin, and I would play it that way, emulating to absorb it and make it my own, so to adopt a language and see if it fit. And, you know, the same in varying degrees with Ms. DeLay and Mr. Mann, too. By that time I was older and more established in the way I handled the instrument. But I think every teacher is looking to bring out the best that comes intrinsically from within the musician rather than superimposing any kind of musical language or thought on top of a student.
And you came here from Boston.
I did. Yes. It's been so long now. I feel like I grew up in Philadelphia, having lived here in 1985 till I was 16. And then I came back in 2005, and I had been 2 years in the Boston Symphony as assistant concertmaster there.
And what drew you from Boston to Philadelphia?
Well, the Philadelphia Orchestra is the best, for one thing. I came back and I was with my colleagues that had been my schoolmates at Curtis, actually. So it was very much like coming home.
That's great. As an associate concertmaster, what is the job like? Do you have to be ready to step in and play lines on a moment's notice?
Not on a moment's notice. I mean, we're fortunate to have the wonderful concertmaster, David Kim. So I'm expected to cover, we call it covering, his job, sitting in the first chair and leading the section and playing any solos if necessary at any given moment, but it's rarely come to that. And if it does, then he's always given me plenty of advance notice, you know, something's coming up and I'm not going to be able to make it that week or something like that. But yes, covering is a very important part of my job. As well, you know, I'm sitting on the front desk with David and I'm helping to communicate both in the musical language and in just plain old yelling out into the orchestra stuff that David has wanted to change in the terms of the bowings or the conductor's interpretation or, you know, just helping to communicate across the orchestra.
Can you give an example?
Oh, for example, when we'll have a bowing change that will affect not only the first violins, but the seconds and the violas and the cellos. In the 18 seconds that we have to discuss it, I'll just help pass along the bowing to the principal second or across the orchestra, just kind of make little hand motions and eye contact to get everybody's attention that a change has come, you know, this kind of thing. We all have to coordinate our bowings so that they're all the same within the section, and then they have to be coordinated with the other string players as well. Even if our lines don't match up exactly, very often we have a part that's kind of like a chorus, and so they have to be aligned in order for the sound to be similar. I mean, it's kind of like breathing and the amount of breath that you take with regard to bowings. So, you know, if it's changed from down bow, which is often a kind of exhaling kind of feeling, and we're changing it to up bow, which is more of an inhale, often, it's a generalization, but it's kind of the basics, then we need to make sure that everybody does it the same way, the same time, and has the same up bow on that note so that everybody has the same feeling of how that note is really played.
As a string player, as a violinist, do you find yourself drawn to certain repertoire?
Well, I think violin is at heart kind of a romantic instrument, a singing romantic instrument. And for me, those lush kind of solos from Ein Heldenleben, which is a fantastic Strauss piece, again, an orchestral kind of concerto, and the sound of a violin kind of as a single character walking down a staircase or having some fantastic adventure is kind of, to me, the epitome of especially concertmaster solos. There's other things, of course. There's fiddling kind of solos, like sometimes Bach, actually. You know, it's so dance-like, and you've got this image of a fiddler kind of like with bow hair flying, and those are really fun. There's slow solos that are like a weeping kind of sound. Those are beautiful, too. But for me, I like this kind of the most swashbuckling, adventurous kind of storytelling solos.
Well, now you're leading the strings. What special challenges or concerns do you have?
Leading involves a lot of little kind of external cues, a lot of body language that it's sort of hard to describe in words, but it mainly involves communicating both forward to the other sections and also backward to your own section, because of course as the concertmaster you're sitting in front and people are sitting behind you and watching your back. The violins are sitting behind you, and so you're trying to communicate with the back of your body as well as with your front across to the cello section and to the viola section.
Can you talk a little bit about the Prokofiev?
The Prokofiev Symphony No. 5 is one of his most popular, and it's just full of extremely gorgeous melodies. It's generally a very upbeat piece, though. It has its dreamy moments, but really the whole last movement is kind of a driving and very upbeat and optimistic kind of piece. It's definitely one of my favorite symphonies to play, actually. It's just so positive and uplifting.